Singleton Bissell is the nationally renowned author of The Scent of God. She has a new book out that's a memoir of her life on Lake Superior on the North Shore in the town of Schroeder. It's a collection of the columns she wrote for a small newspaper there. It's called A View of the Lake. I asked Beryl how it was that she moved to the North Shore.
You know, when my husband and I married in 1996, we had a lot of dreams, but one of the dreams was not to move to Lake Superior. We were very happy living in the Twin Cities. My husband loved the metropolitan life, and he was a consultant and flew all over the country, and the airport was just a short distance away. And I had no knowledge of the North Shore whatsoever. I thought it ended at Gooseberry Falls. So a writing retreat in Lutzen that I was invited to go write for a couple of weeks was my first introduction to the Lake Superior area. It was fall. It was the height of fall colors. And you know how beautiful the fall is up here. Hordes of people come up to see fall color. And I was living up there at the time for these several weeks. And it was glorious, let's just put it that way. And I kept thinking, oh, wouldn't Bill love it up here? So I told him about it, and I don't know, should I tell you about the marriage proposal that I received while I was there, or would that take too much time?
No, I would love to hear that.
Yeah. Well, this writing retreat had no telephones, and visitors and trucks and what have you were not even allowed to come down the driveway. So it was my birthday, October 10th, and I'd gone out for a hike. I was hiking the Temperance River Carlton Hike, and it was such an incredibly wonderful day, and I got back to the lodge. And on this beautiful lodge table, it's a Lundy home, so if anybody knows what Lundy is, a very famous architect who built a number of Norwegian-style cabins up here. But on the table were a dozen red roses and three cards propped up, each one numbered 1, 2, 3. And the first card said, to my best friend, will you marry me? And the second one was, to the love of my life, will you marry me? And the third one was, to my wife, will you marry me? And it was such a perfect proposal that I ran to the Lutzen Resort, because we didn't have a phone there, the two-mile run, and phoned him and got his answering machine. and I said, yes, that's all I said. And then the next morning, I went back and phoned my answering machine at home. And there was nothing from Bill whatsoever, nothing. So when I finally, got home and he was home, I said, why didn't you ever call? And he slammed his head and he says, oh, my gracious. He said, I was so excited. I took my entire crew out for supper. So they had celebrated, and I, meanwhile, was thinking, what happened? I finally said yes to his proposals, and he's not responding. But anyway, I had told him about the North Shore, and that summer, the following summer, actually, because it was fall when I was there, we decided, had the opportunity to rent a little fisherman's cabin northeast of Grand Marais, one of those very primitive places with an outhouse and a kerosene stove, and it was charming. And Bill fell in love with the North Shore and decided he really wanted to buy that little cabin. Well, it had been in the family's, it belonged to one particular family, ever since their fishing grandfather built it way back in the 1870 or so, and they did not want to sell it. But he didn't tell me this, that he was as in love with the North Shore as I was. And that following winter, he kept perusing the for sale ads in the Minneapolis Star Tribune and Pioneer Press. And one May morning, he said to me, Beryl, you know, would you be interested in coming to the North Shore with me? There's a cabin for sale with a view of the lake. And I said, well, of course, I'd love to do that. So up we came, and the cabin was a total bust. It was it was one of those topsy-turvy type places, and it had absolutely no view of the lake. We were way up on a hill on a busy road. And maybe in winter, if you peeked real hard out one window, you could have seen the lake, but... So we drove back, and on the way back, I passed this for sale by owner sign, big sign, in Schroeder. And I was driving because Bill had to fly out that afternoon. I think he was working in Russia or someplace like that. And I knew that I shouldn't really wake him up, but I did, finally. We were down in Silver Bay already when I finally thought, I have to say something. I woke him up and I said, Bill, there was this for sale by owner home back in Schroeder. You know, do you think we could turn around and go see it? And so he said, oh, sure, let's do that. So we went back and we went down the driveway and we hadn't even seen the lake yet, but this wonderful long driveway with white pine and white spruce and birch trees, and it was just gorgeous. And he said, oh, Beryl, I think you've gotten us into big trouble. And sure enough, when we saw the house, it just looked like it was floating on water. It was lots of windows. Even the front door was all glass. And no matter where you looked, you just looked right out to the lake. So we spent a couple of hours there walking around the property and sitting on the rocks down near the lake, and we looked at one another. We thought, should we? And we just knew we had to have that place. So we left that afternoon, leaving a check behind for the owner, saying we were very interested in buying, and we got home to Arden Hills, and we thought, we're out of our minds. We know nothing about living up there. We couldn't even remember what the house looked like. All we could remember was the view of the lake. And so for several weeks, we wrestled back and forth. And every day, we decide, no, it's ridiculous. We should give up that idea. This is the best place to live here in the cities. And then we'd wake up in the morning in a grand funk because we just knew we were meant to be up there. So we finally did. I said to Bill, I said, listen, honey, let's ask God for a sign. I was always doing this, ask God for a sign. And so he said, well, okay. And I said, let's put the house on the market, and if it sells within 2 weeks, that's the sign we're supposed to buy the house up on the North Shore. And so he said, well, okay. We put the house on the market, and that same day, we had two offers over and above what we were asking. So then we had to make sure we got the house up here. So then we had to quickly call the owner and say, we've changed our mind. We really do want that house. You know, let's negotiate. And so we ended up here on the North Shore, and I've been incredibly happy here ever since. Bill has had a bit of a harder time adjusting because everything was more difficult for him up here. We moved into the house, and almost immediately, the one airline that flew out of Duluth canceled. You know, it went on strike. And the same thing with the telephone. Bill needs airports and telephones and fax service. Or at that time, it was fax. Email was not quite as prevalent a mode of communication at the time. And we couldn't even get email anyway because we had no means of accessing. There was no access to satellites or cable. And so, well, we began to think this was a bad mistake moving up here. But then things started to work out nicely, and we stayed here, and I stayed here, and was incredibly happy. Bill would come here and think, oh, my God, that drive. He hated the drive. He still hates that drive because it adds so many hours just flying into Duluth and then having another hour and 40-minute ride to get home to our place. So he still has difficulty, but as soon as he gets here, he thinks, oh, here I am. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And his doubts disappear until his next trip.
We're talking with Beryl Singleton Bissell about her experience living on the North Shore and how she got there. She's written about it in a book of essays called A View of the Lake. So what did it mean for you, Beryl, moving there? You were working at Milkweed Press in the Twin Cities, which must have been a wonderful place to work and such a literary place. But what did it mean for you personally in terms of your writing to move up to the North Shore?
Well, one of the conditions Bill did put on our move was, if we move, will you promise to write your book? He knew I was working on a book. I was working on it very sporadically because when you're working for a press that publishes the beautiful books that Milkweed Editions publishes, you think, oh, what have I got to say that anybody wants to listen to? And so I would put my dreams of writing a book on the back burner. But Bill really believed in my ability to write, and he wanted me to tell this story, which eventually became The Scent of God. So I'd have to leave Milkweed Editions, of course, and that was hard because I really loved working there. But I had this wonderful incentive, which was to become a writer. And I came up here, and people would ask me, well, what do you do? And I would tell them that, well, I was a writer. I had to take my courage in both hands to say it because it takes courage to say you're a writer. And immediately they would say, well, what have you written? And I had to say, nothing. I'm working on a book, but I really was not a writer per se, except in dreams. And it was around that time that I noticed an editorial in our local paper here, the Cook County News Herald, in which the editor said that so many people come to the North Shore year after year after year. Some have been coming 20, 25 years, always dreaming of moving here someday, retiring here. And a lot of people do retire up here to fulfill that dream. But sometimes it happens that people come up here and hate it. You know, they've dreamed of living here, but living here is a far different experience than visiting here. And so I thought, well, he might be interested in our story, because at that time, the airline was on strike, the telephones were on strike. And Bill, we had a campground next door where people would shout and scream and jump off the rocks right into the lake. And this would happen sometimes at 2 in the morning. And next door, well, 1 mile away, Taconite Harbor, their energy-producing site for Hoyt Lakes, rumbled so noisily that Bill even felt the vibrations coming through the house. And so, you know, it did seem that this was not going to be a good idea, but I proposed a column to the editor and sent him a few samples. And he said, I should really do this, and it would be great. And I had 500 words to do it in. I'd get my picture. I'd have my own byline. And that if I wasn't raising people's hackles, then I probably was not writing anything worthwhile. Well, I've always avoided conflict. I'm not great at conflict normally. But the first time I got a nasty letter to the editor, I thought, oh, yes, I've succeeded. I'm writing something worthwhile. I was getting letters from all over the country because people come here from other places where maybe they were here, and they keep getting the local newspaper because they want to stay in touch with what's happening on the North Shore. And so the column became quite popular, let's put it that way. And my Emily Buchwald, who founded Milkweed Editions, she suggested this book. She said, she had loved my columns. She would send them out to all sorts of people. And she said, why don't you pull a book together based on your columns? And so I did this, my book. It's basically about learning how to live in a community and make it a home. It really transformed me moving up here because I had not been much of an outdoor person prior to that, and I had definitely never been a community-minded person. Anything that smacked of togetherness, I avoided like the plague. And that all changed up here. I wanted to know everything about the surroundings here, every bug, every tree, every fern, mushroom. I was buying books galore and taking hikes and investigating everything with magnifying glasses and learning names and having a wonderful time that way. And I guess I was here maybe 1 week. And I happened to go up to the post office, which is our local gathering spot. And I heard someone talking about the Schroeder Area Historical Society. And I thought, my gosh, isn't that the funniest thing I've ever heard? And this community has 185 people, and they have their own historical society. So I volunteered. I said, listen, I'd like to join that, and I'd be glad to help in any way I could, because I really was already in love with this area, and I thought, ooh, to learn the history of the place would be so wonderful. I had no idea that same week. I wasn't even a member of the board, barely, not even a member, and they appointed me oral history chair and marketing and publicity person. So I found myself totally engrossed in meeting people up here, learning, meeting all these wonderful old-timers who, were second generation. Their parents had been the early settlers here, And nobody had ever done any oral histories. And so I was introduced to this community of survivors, let's put it that way, who had no idea how wonderful their stories were and how meaningful they would be. But it was a great introduction for me as a newcomer. Newcomers are not always welcomed warmly. We come and we buy homes and we raise the prices of the property and the tax rates go up. And the people who were born here have a very hard time living here because everything's gotten so expensive. So, but instead of just being that newcomer, I became, you know, Beryl, who was interested in oral histories, and I would be invited into their homes for tea and looking at albums and bringing my tape recorder along and recording their stories. And it was a good experience for me, but I think it was also a great experience for them because they suddenly realized that they had incredible stories to tell, that their stories were very important. And I came to realize, too, how important it is for everyone to tell their story. Whether or not it ever gets published, these are the pieces of history that end up in museums, in the History Center in Minneapolis. Some of the most precious things are the journals and the diaries of people who lived way back when the state was young. So that's what I did, and I got totally involved in the community and forgot all about writing my book. So eventually I did write the book, but it meant I had to leave the society because I was spending huge amounts of time up there. Transcribing oral histories takes forever. I'm not a magnificent typer. It would take many, many hours to do even one page, listening to the tape and playing it back and listening to it and playing it back again. And so anyway, that's what I was doing. But those oral histories now have formed the basis of a book that the Schroeder Area Historical Society published last year on the history of the Schroeder area. And it's fascinating because this is where the John Schroeder Lumber Company came, and it lumbered 35 square miles of white pine and, you know, stripped the landscape and sent it over to Ashland to be milled and went down to Iowa to build barns. Now, Bill says that he's certain that his family's barn was built of North Shore white pine. And then the fishing community and Taconite Harbor, the building of Taconite Harbor, is a fascinating story. So it's an amazing place to live, and it has a great heritage. Ever since then, I've become very involved in community.
What's that been like for you? It sounds like your life in Arden Hills was very different in that sense, in knowing your neighbors or being involved in the community. Has that been a good thing, or is there ups and downs to knowing everybody when you go to the post office?
Yeah, no, I've really totally enjoyed it, except for the fact that you really do have to learn to say no, because otherwise you'd be on every board under the sun, and your life can be consumed. Whenever people come up here and say, well, what do you do all day? I say, oh, what don't you do? Because you can be as busy as you want to be. And I'm more of a solitary person. I always have been. Bill calls our home here Beryl's Monastery, because I'm such a solitary normally, but I really love meeting people. Usually don't go out of my way to meet them, but now as a writer, I meet people all the time. I'm always getting letters, and people will even come up here and stop and visit. So I'm very much, I would suppose, at the disposal of others, let's put it that way, and my time isn't always my own, but I've learned just to enter into that moment and to know that part of my vocation is to be there for other people, as well as to be a writer. So,
on your website, you have a photograph of where you write. Will you tell us about that little place?
Oh, yes, I will. I'd love to. When I went to Norcroft, the writer's retreat for women, there were four women at a time who would get to go up there, and each one had a little writing shed in the woods. If you had a room with a view of the lake in the lodge to sleep in, then you were in the woods, in a little shed. If you had no view of the lake from the lodge you were in, you had a little writing shed on the lake. These are little, I guess that you could say they're 8 by 8 square feet, very rustic looking little buildings, but inside they're beautiful. They're all lined with, I think it's cedar, and a big window along one side, and a big slab of wood, polished. I mean, it's nice wood, and a chair and a few shelves for books, and they had a little rocking chair there, and you would go there and you would write, and that's why you went to Norcroft. You went there to write. You had to keep silence, actually. They had a very strict rule of silence, so sort of like a monastic existence. You could only speak in the evening after, you know, when supper was being prepared, and if you wanted to hang out with the other writers, you could, or you could just go back to your writing shed. Well, I spent a lot of time in that writing shed, and I really pulled The Scent of God together there, the basic structure of that book, which then went on to win a Law Creative Nonfiction Award, and I got to work with Scott Russell Sanders on the book, The Scent of God. I used to help out at Norcroft a lot after I moved up here. They had a caretaker who would take care of all the inhabitants of the, or residents at the Norcroft. They would buy their food. You had to cook your own food, but they would buy the food for you, so you had no expenses whatsoever. And I would go up there and take her place when she would go on vacation, and I would take care of the residents and water the flowers and feed the birds and supply their needs and be there for whatever questions they had, or if they needed an errand run, I would run it for them. And Joan Drury, who founded Norcroft at one point, said, well, you know, we really can't afford to pay you very much, but I'm wondering if you might be interested in having a writer's shed. She had to close Norcroft because of poor health, and it was a real drain on her, both physically, emotionally, and financially. And so she closed it, and when she closed it, I got the writing shed where I had written most of The Scent of God. All I had to do was transport it down here, which was quite an exciting event to see how they do that. Yeah, it was wonderful watching it. And since then, that's been my home away from home. I write out there, and really a mistake to ever get onto the internet before you start writing because you get consumed with emails. I think you know probably what that's like. And out in my writing shed, I don't have any internet access. So I go out there, and actually, I'm just finished my third book. I'm down to the final edits in it. But I've been living out there, and I'll meet people now who say, oh, you know, are you visiting? Because they see so little of me that I've sort of that barrel has moved away. But I'm still here. I say, no, I'm just in my writing shed. And that's where I spend most of every day, except when I'm out hiking or running errands or whatever.
What's your third book?
The third book is the sequel to The Scent
of God. Oh, great. Good.
Yeah, and everybody has been waiting for that book. And when A View of the Lake came out, it was kind of funny because I kept having to say, now, this isn't the sequel to The Scent of God, but in some ways it is, because it's a now memoir of, you know, there was The Scent of God, and then there's the sequel, and then there's now. So I more or less skipped the sequel, but it was a very healing thing to write A View of the Lake, because it took me totally away from the intense pain of writing the sequel. It's a very difficult story to tell because it deals with the choices and experiences that would eventually lead to my daughter's violent death at the age of 24. So when I finished writing A View of the Lake, I had a nice space of a year, and then I went back to writing the sequel, and it has just flowed since then. It's been a wonderful experience, and the amazing thing is that the book is more or less a search for my daughter after she died, to find a daughter who, though she, you know, was with me, I lost. I lost because she became a tormented young woman, and I lost touch with her. We no longer could hear what we were saying to one another. She was using drugs, and anybody who's ever had a child who uses drugs knows that they're master manipulators, and you don't know what to believe or what not to believe. And so I really stopped listening to her, and she stopped listening to me. But now as I'm writing this book, I hear her so clearly, and I hear what she tried to tell me then that I couldn't hear. I have all these wonderful records, 23 years worth of journals, and I have medical records, many, many medical records that have revealed a Francesca to me that I didn't know existed, a child who loved me so tremendously that that was the greatest pain of her recovery, that she had lost, you know, this mother that she loved. So I've heard those words now. Now I hear her calling mm-hmm. her mother. Mommy, look at me. Mommy, I'm here. And I couldn't hear that then. So,
Beryl, it seems like Lake Superior and that place where you live in Schroeder is so much a part of you now. Does it help you through difficult times like that too, as well as sort of the beauty and loveliness of it?
Well, yes. I'll tell you, at first, it was a wonderful place to go outside and scream Francesca's name.
Mm-hmm.
Into the wind where nobody could hear me. I have no immediate neighbors. There's a campground on one side that's only busy during the summer, and on the other side is a neighbor who's just up here periodically a few times a year. I was able to grieve fully, and I have always done this. I've always known that in order to heal from grief, you have to enter grief. You can't hide from it. Some people get so busy that they don't deal with it, but I just enter grief, and I went through a period of terrible depression for 2 years in which I really ceased functioning. I couldn't even make small decisions. But the land never put any pressures on me to be other than I was, and which was a mess. And just having that vast expanse of the lake, being able to look at the lake and to see the cycle of life. The lake and the landscape, they're like mentors to me. They reveal this wonderful cycle that there's benevolence and there's beauty, but there's also danger and death. And so you're living with this, and you recognize that it's all good, it's all blessed, it's all as it should be. It's part of the cycle of life. So, yeah, living here was absolutely the best place I could have been to heal. And it was also that here I met the wonderful Benedictine nuns down in Duluth at St. Scholastica, who became a very important part of my healing also, because I would reach out to them. I have a wonderful spiritual director there, Sister Lois. And just regaining this sense of connection with God, which I had a rather bumpy relationship with God from my early days of extreme yearning and then constant suffering, your relationship with God sometimes falls into a hole. But I know that rebuilding that relationship has been a very important part of my healing. Let's put it that way.
That's Beryl Singleton Bissell. The new book is called A View of the Lake. You can find information on all her books at her website, BerylSingletonBissell.com. You're listening to Real Good Words.